It's time for today's episode of the UGA Sports Live Podcast, recorded in front of a slightly tipsy studio audience at world-famous Champions Fried Chicken. We will have the latest on Georgia Bulldogs football, basketball, and recruiting. Watch live and send us your questions on the 11 Alive Sports page on Facebook. Be advised, this podcast is off the record and not safe for work. Also, be sure to subscribe to the UGA Sports Live Podcast on iTunes and Google Play.
5-yard penalty.
It's my fault. I haven't
repeat first down. All right.
It was hands to the face by Roddy.
Take it from the top.
There were hands to the face. Damn it, coach.
How many times can we have that?
I can get Ray Goff in here, you know.
Ray'd be good, but.
Welcome to the UGA Sports Live Podcast with Coach Jim Donnan, myself, Roddy DeBulsey, Jake Roos of UGA Sports. We're here live at Champions on Baxter Street. Please be sure you come in. When you come in for that Sanford game this weekend, you swing by here, pick up one of their giant boxes of chicken fingers. I mean,
you can get tamales, you can get fried chicken.
I was going to say chicken fingers, but the chicken strips. I mean, they're these.
Yeah, giant. Fingers is not really. This is a finger. These are like a hand. I mean, these are.
it's unreal chicken. It's the best fried chicken you have. Personally, I'm big on the tamales and the banana pudding. You can tell that body by banana pudding I got going on here. We have a wonderful list of sponsors who are helping us out. We have the All-Day IPA by Founders Brewing.
Yes,
I had a bunch of those up in Wrigleyville. Coach, I have to tell you about those. I mean, whew, those were fantastic. And then Athens Ford, home of the lifetime powertrain warranty. You can get it on a new car. You can get it on a used car up to 8 years old. So if you have you're going by there to buy a used car, it's got under 80,000 miles on it, you can get a lifetime powertrain warranty. The transmission goes out on it, you know, a year later, you're out $100. That's the deductible. Of course, Your Pie is a big sponsor of ours. If you don't want to come in and get some fried chicken, which I think you're foolish not to, but say you've had your fried chicken, you're looking for something for dinner, swing by Your Pie, get your own personal New York-style pizza. Fabulous. So,
and tell us again what your favorite kind is.
Mine is a Southern Heat. It has chicken, hot sauce on it. It is phenomenal. It's the Ishka is a good one. That's a popular one. The guy that Drew French that created the whole thing, he's just a genius. And I tell people all the time, if I weren't doing this, I'd be doing that. I want to thank Cable East for being a sponsor and 365 Game Day. 365 Game Day, when you need all your new Georgia gear, you know, your Georgia logos, your hats, and all that stuff. We had one guy who ordered a hat from them. He forgot his hat on his way to Chicago. So he ordered one on Friday. It was delivered to his hotel on Saturday. He wore it to the game.
That's pretty
sweet.
What
a crazy
right
world
there.
We live in right now. So 365 Game Day. And, of course, you know, the guys at Cable East, they're outlived by you, Coach Robert Wall out there.
The good part of town,
the good part. He's got no reason to advertise our show. He's just a huge Georgia fan. So our hats off to Robert Wall over at Cable East. But if you're on the 11 Live Sports page where you're watching this show, do us a favor and click the little like button up there. That's all they're asking to put us on. So thank you very much, 11 Live Sports, for hosting it. And also, if you like high school football, they go to so many games every Friday night. You need to watch their 11 Live Sports shows on Friday, and especially Sports Extra on Sunday nights.
Absolutely, because,
This is the guy knocking that out.
And you know the thing about that, besides just the fact they cover so many games, it's a big thrill for a kid that might not ever play in college for some TV group to come out there and cover their game.
Oh,
I mean, it gives a little bit of extra to them. And, you know, when you're out there covering games like that, just don't take it for granted. The kids, it means a lot to these young
players.
Oh, man,
they love it. They love it.
Well, not only that, I mean, they went out and they covered the kids that Georgia fans are interested in, plus, you know, guys who, like you said, they may never play in college, but if a big offensive lineman, you know, or defensive lineman picks up a fumble and rumbles into the end zone, he's got that on the local news
exactly.
at 11 o'clock. That's huge. He may never play again, but there's his score
got
on
that
TV.
Tape forever.
Yeah, absolutely. So, thanks to the folks at 11 Alive, they take care of us wonderfully, as does Champions.
I got one quick little story for you.
Let's jump on in.
Up in West Virginia, this kid was being recruited up there, and one of the local stations went out to cover him. And you know how they have you run through the banner there, you know, your team runs through the banner, and he's leading the team through the banner, and he tripped and fell.
Oh, no.
And had that on the sports thing. My offensive line coach called me up and said, "Coach, we don't want that guy. He can't even run through the banner."
Well, did you take him?
No, we didn't. Hey, if you can't run through the banner, man, how are you going to block some of these guys?
pro tip to all you aspiring college athletes out there.
Just avoid the banner. There's no need taking an unnecessary risk.
You don't want to be the first guy through. You don't know what those cheerleaders have done. They might reinforce it with some super strong tape. You know,
exactly.
It's going to be dangerous. We're going to jump right into the show. Coach, I know that we're a couple days behind. Normally, we're going to do this show every Tuesday at noon.
Make sure y'all join us for that, by the way.
Yeah, you'll come in.
We had some people coming in on Tuesday, but they got to play golf today with this kind of weather. But hopefully we can get a good crowd in here and get some questions from the crowd.
We got some friends in here
now. We got some people in already. But anyhow.
But we got moved back 2 days because of the hurricane. And I know you've had 2 days to simmer, to process your thoughts on the Georgia-Notre Dame game. It was a huge game. I mean, granted, Notre Dame was 4-8 last year, and a lot of people are now going, wow, they're not that good. But come on, that was a big deal. Going to Notre Dame, winning on national television in a game that you were an underdog in, you know.
Exactly, I think just the fact that, you know, you're playing for the second year now with a freshman quarterback with limited experience. And
a new offensive line again.
And particularly that point, which is always going to be a problem with any team, but just the fact we were able to come from behind four different times, it really signifies to me, and we had that happen several times last year, that since the direction here and the poise that the staff has under Kirby Smart is definitely out there. And what happens is, you're able to make the adjustments, whether it be any form or fashion, whatever it might be, but you're able to, you know, your kids believe that you've got a good plan and you're going to be able to handle it. Certainly the atmosphere was awesome. You guys were there. I was able to watch it on TV, but to see that many Georgia people there, just overwhelming, and it was just
Did that surprise you at all?
Well, you know, it surprised me how many were there. I knew a lot of people were going, but just the fact you're in a it's just hard to get tickets to another team stadium like that. So some people must have made a lot of money out there.
No doubt.
But I think just the fact that so many people made the trip, and in their defense, a lot of them, you know, it was a social deal, but it's also a loyalty type deal where, just like all the people showed up for Kirby's first spring game here, people want to back this program. They want to do what's necessary to get the stuff going for them. And I think overall, that win is going to help us as the season progresses, just because everybody in the country got to see a glimpse of what our defense is all about. Yeah. And hopefully our offense will catch up. Special teams continue to be really, really good for us. And, you know, a lot of times you don't hear a lot about individual, but I think Jason Stanley really making a big contribution on the special teams in a lot of different ways, covering and, you know, whatever it might be. You just got unsung heroes out there doing a good job.
Now, you saw in that first game, Rodrigo Blankenship putting every ball in the back of the end zone. This game, a lot of those balls were landing on between the 3 and the 5. Do you think that was by design? Because at the end of the game, when he really decided to put his foot into one, he kicked it almost out of the back of the end zone, almost didn't land into it. So it seemed like he was kicking them high and short, or do you think he was just
You never know what the plan is. If you feel good about your coverage sometime and you can get them inside the 25, you go for it. But
yeah.
I don't know many coaches that wouldn't take one out of the end zone every time. So I really don't have privy to understand what their thought process. But I did feel like, coverage-wise, we're tackling so well in the open field, and we hadn't had to make many tackles on the punts because they've been so high and the coverage has been very good. So, but, you know, every week we'll talk about the hidden yardage involved, and you watch all these teams around the country that are sacrificing special teams and having situations where their offense or defense have been put in really tough situations because of their lack of special teams play, and I think that's something you can look forward to with our team. I think that's going to give us an edge in some of these tight games, and we're going to have some tight games until our line develops, until our passing game becomes more crisp. And, you know, overall, it's just a good win on the road against a good team. And I think Notre Dame's schedule is going to set out where they're going to win 7 or 8 games, where they'll be able to go to elite status. I think their defense has some real holes in it in the secondary, and they just don't have the passing game that I thought they did. I was really surprised they didn't try some more deep balls, but we rushed him so well, he really couldn't get the ball off.
Well, and I want to ask you, before we kind of dive into the,
Is that for real for you, having a real founder?
I'm going to keep your bloody paws off my beer.
I'm the only one who gets to drink
on air. You mentioned the defense, and that made me think of the all-day IPA.
I like it.
Because they went all day.
I think once we get to the conference games, you guys need to hit those every day. That's a conference day IPA
I want to ask you, though, Coach, a little bit, before we dive into the specifics of each position group, one of the big questions that I've heard from a lot of people over the course of this week and after the game and since that time, do you think that this is the kind of game that is a program changer? Can it be one that you can build off of to kind of, sort of move the narrative a little bit from what Georgia was to what Georgia wants to be now?
You know, I think the program changer was the day they hired Kirby Smart. Yeah, I just feel like that made that commitment to go in a different way. Not that it wasn't going the right way under Coach Rick, but, if you're going to make a change with a guy doing as well as he did,
right,
you better be sold on it. And everything that he's done, even though we've lost a couple tight games, but everything he's done since that date has made me feel like we're on the way. And I said a couple weeks ago, hey, if you're going to get some in Georgia, you better get it this year, because you just look at our team, the way we look on the hoof, the way we move defensively, the size of our offensive linemen, the really good athleticism of these recruits. I just feel like, certainly it was a good win, and we're going to have some tough, difficult games this year. As far as just a program changer, though, I don't know that I think the change, the culture's already changing here. The way our kids lift weights, everything about it just seems to me like they're on the right move.
Well, and I guess I asked that question because people looked at it from last week, or I'm sorry, from last year. And like you mentioned, those tight losses and some of those games you didn't expect to lose. This is a game that I think a lot of people kind of felt could go either way. I think that
I would say, without interrupting you here,
no,
I would say the win over Auburn last year was more of a program changer than anything. Just because we were in the kind of the dumps. We hadn't won. We'd lost to Florida very convincingly. We had that terrible loss to Vanderbilt. And then we're playing against a nationally ranked team at home that, was heavily favored over us. And we shut them down cold. And even though we lost the next game to Tech later on, I just feel like that since that game that our team has really come on strong, a good win over TCU. And TCU looked really good against Arkansas last week.
Yeah.
So I just feel like, we've won like four of our last five. So we're on the way.
Cool.
Do you think that's the coaches working with what they have, more buy-in, or just the culmination of the development since Kirby Smart's gotten here?
There's always going to be some doubt in any situations.
Yeah.
When you have the changeover as far as guys that you recruited and didn't recruit and didn't know, and building that trust more than anything. And I think it takes a little while. And I said this on our first show in the summer, that a year later, Kirby knows what to expect from these kids and vice versa. But he also knows maybe he might have overrated some guy that he thought was better than he first thought, or vice versa. And that's why we've seen an influx of transfers. We've seen J.R. Reed come in here and do a terrific job, kind of like Mo Smith did last year. We've seen our punter come in and do a terrific job of turning the field around. And I've said it before about Kirby being a CEO type general manager. He knows how to use personnel. Moving Mark Webb over to from offense to defense, that was a move that very unselfish by the young man, but it's one that was needed. And, he recognizes the talent, and he moves those guys around. And I felt like that was something that I was pretty good at, is seeing, you don't want a guy sitting on the bench that's better than the guy that's playing. Guys like Chris Terry or whoever it might be. You move guys around and get your best 22. And I think that stems from a long time ago, one of the pro coaches came out where you rated the players 1 through 44 on your team. And, you always do that every week.
Yeah.
And if some guys are rated in their top 20 and they're not playing because they're on the other side of the ball, you got to look hard at it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's the way that's Kirby point. Does it. And I like that rating, something I've always used. And you constantly look at, too, you guys recruiting expert like Jake. You got 5 stars, 4 stars, all that. But you also look at, you rate your players as all conference guys, starter, you know, not ready and things like that. If you got a lot of not readies playing, you're going to get your butt beat. If you got some starters, you're in pretty good shape to be, you know, 8-4. If you got all conference guys, 5 or 6 guys, guys like Roquan Smith, Trenton Thompson, those are guys that play for anybody, and that's what you got to get on your team if you're going to win this league.
Absolutely.
So if you were looking at Georgia's 1-44, who are your top three?
My top three players?
Top three players, 1-44.
Holy smoke. way to put me on the
You set it up. I'm like, oh, he walked now, right
anything,
into that trap.
Anything I say here is going to be tweeted out. Jim Donovan, 1-40. You know, we've got a lot of good players.
Well, you mentioned Roquan. I think after Saturday, there's not a whole lot of question that he's one of the
top. I think he's right there, too. And, you know, Trent Thompson. And, of course, Nick and Sony, you put those guys simultaneous. But also – you just look at the fact that some of these guys came back last year, helped our team. I mean, I would say in our first 6 or 8, all of those guys could have probably gone to the NFL, and you supplement your team with them coming back. That helps your squad. But we've got more athletic guys on our team than we had last year, that's for sure, when you add the special teams group that we've got helping our special teams and got some competition. And you also look at, you've played 2 games here without your – arguably, for sure, your best defensive back in Malcolm Parrish as far as a cover guy and your first-team quarterback.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and people can say what they want to about Fromm and all, and he's done a good job, but Jacob Eason beat him out. I mean, he won the job,
yeah.
Clear and simple. So to win 2 games like that, it means a lot for what Fromm's been able to do, but also the way our team's rallied around that.
I want to talk to you about, you mentioned, you know, some of these guys who came back. Obviously, that was a huge storyline last week. We got to see Lorenzo Carter and Davin Belby both make tremendous contributions. I think, you know, Lorenzo Carter probably played the game of his career at Georgia, and Davin Bellamy obviously came in with the play of the game.
The play of the game against an all-star tackle.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a guy who's
going to be drafted, and even though the guy, you know, missed some people, that just goes to show you, people are going to make mistakes. You see it on NFL. You'll see it tonight. You know, they talk about the mesh between Fromm and Chubb. I mean, those are going to happen to any good quarterback and any back. You just can't play a perfect game. But I think Bellamy coming off the edge. But the thing about Lowe is just the fact he's chiseled up. He looks like what you want for a prototype player. He can move, he can jump, he can go out and play in coverage, and you just expect him to dominate more than maybe he can, but you got to take into account these other teams watch tape. They know what these guys are capable of, and they say, who we got to take care of? Number one, we can't let Trent Thompson just wear us out up front, and we can't let Lowe come off the edge on us. And even if Bellamy does, we got to, you know, pick our poison. So those two guys, Thompson and Carter, get a lot of chip blocks.
Tailback over right. every time he would line up.
So he doesn't get the benefit of a lot of one-on-one rushes.
Sure.
And take up for him on that. But I think our pass rush overall, just the way we were able to control that team, not only from a passing perspective, but a rush defense that only gave up one run 8 yards or more, and the open field tackling, we talked about that again last week. Open field tackling is hard to teach because it's hard to practice because you got to get ready every week, but you don't want to get guys hurt running the ball or tackling. So
absolutely.
Well, that's my pet peeve about Georgia a couple years ago, and then go back to that Tennessee game where they lost up in Knoxville. Grabbing guys up here around the shoulders, just constantly and trying to ride a guy down. And what I noticed this past game, especially when they were going after this Wimbush and guys like that, diving into guys' legs, hitting them, you know, from underneath the shoulder pads.
Well, you
down.
Want to keep your head up. You know, you don't want to lead with your helmet. But you know, a lot of people are using this hawk tackle, you know, and the reason they call it hawk, it's, you know, the Seahawks do it where it's a lot like rugby where they'll grab these guys and throw them down, you know, and it's pretty effective. And a lot of little league teams and junior high teams are using it too. So go on the internet, all you people want to watch it, look at hawk tackle. And see how these people are teaching tackling. A lot of teams use that. And But I would say overall, just the competitive nature.
I got to say I hate it because we saw so many times guys break free from that.
Well, they
can. In that game, the guy almost ran for a touchdown.
They can, but I don't like diving at people's feet, too.
No.
I mean, you miss a lot of tackles.
Yeah, absolutely.
I like for them to form up on them, too. But, I mean, there's a lot of different ways to get the guy down. I mean, they don't trip them like you used to. Yeah. No, I mean.
But it was a lot more, like you said, open tackling, a lot more short tackling. I did not see a lot of broken tackles, you know, and where
right. – That's
because granted, sometimes you want to slow a guy.
Exactly. We're swarming the ball and we're all over them. And they did the same thing on us. I mean, we made a couple big runs, which was, when you take into account, three of our runs got over 100 yards and we got 160 some rushing. So, I mean, you know, we weren't very effective running the ball over and over, but we didn't really focus on that. It didn't look like we tried to spread them out and get some space and we hit some big passes. But I just think. Tackling is you can either tackle or you can't. I mean, you got the ability, the innate ability, the instinct that you can put a guy on the ground and you want to tackle a guy. You know, back when I played in high school and I was playing defensive back, I was just hoping the guy didn't get to me. I was back there as a quarterback, the safety guy, and I was the original safety, I can tell you that. But, I mean, you know, some guys just cold-blooded. They want to hit people, and that's the way it is. But I would say this, the play of the game to me, besides a lot of different things, was J.R. Reed tackling that Wimbush on third
and fourth. That was the whole reason I bring that, just catching the guy's legs instead of saying, hey, if I can't grab him around the shoulders, I'm just going to keep running until I catch up to him.
And
just taking him out. And then the same thing, but the same concept, but a play that you just don't realize was big was LeCount's pass breakup.
Oh, yeah. He's a smart player. And I think overall there's a lot of different ways to look at it, but that was a team that got over 400 yards rushing last week against a good Temple team that, you know, the year before was in the top 10 in the nation in rushing defense. So I think there's a little bit to be said about maybe Notre Dame's not quite as good offensively as we thought they were, but I think our defense is probably better than I thought it was because of the way it performed tackling, you know, in the open space. I knew that we could cloud it up and crowd it inside with our thickness, but our open field tackling was spectacular.
Well, we've talked about several things that Georgia's done well, and I definitely want to go back to that. One thing I want to ask you about,
negative.
Well, the thing I wanted to ask you about was the number of penalties.
Put the electrodes in me.
The number of penalties, 12 for 127 yards. Normally, you know, it's tough to win a game when those are your numbers. Talk to me. You know, I think that what people are wondering is this an undisciplined team or is this an aggressive team, and how do you kind of balance those things out?
Well, last year we were an immature team in a lot of different areas, but we were very mature as far as we didn't beat ourselves with penalties. I think we were the least penalized team in the league, and that comes from the coach because he knew one of the ways we got to try to make up for ineffectiveness on offense is not get a lot of penalties, and we didn't do that. Some of these penalties Saturday, and this was an SEC group. Matt Austin was SEC lead official there, who's a good official. I mean, he's as good as you got in the SEC, and that was a big.
Well, that ain't saying a whole lot, Coach. That's a low bar.
Well, that's true.
I mean, that's
I'm not going to take a. It's a hard job being an official.
And, it is.
You know, I'm not on the officials trying to get them any more money or anything. It's a tough deal, but
I would like them to be permanent, but you know, be a full time job.
Yeah, it's hard to pay somebody that much and still. Pay for these other sports you got to take
care
of.
That's what I'm saying. You know, they go from that, then they go to volleyball. You know, they do, hey, look, you come, then you do basketball. You are an official. That's your job year round. Then you come do baseball.
Hey, you want to be a volleyball official? You can go do a junior high game and get three games in about an hour and make over $100 going out there. That's a pretty good job.
Yeah,
I think I asked a guy that the other day. I said, how much they pay you? He said, $100 for three games. I said, hey, that's pretty good, plus mileage. But the bottom line on the officiating and what you asked, Jake, let's get to that. Some of these penalties, hands to the face, you know, I want our team to be aggressive, and I think Kirby might have talked about that. And sometimes you're going to get those calls, but what you don't want is blocking the back, holding, clips, piling on, unsportsmanlike conduct, things like that. And the motion penalties and those kind of things, those will hurt you a whole lot more. But hands to the face, I mean, you know, it's a tough game, and you start jacking the guy up and trying to get under his pads, and then, you know, you hit him a little harder than you think, and your hands goes up there on his face, they're going to call it. So, well, I think it's a little bit in between both. We can do better on those others, but I think the aggressiveness I like. So if it becomes a trend now, we're going to have to worry a little bit more about it.
Now, if you were – had a ref over there on your side, and you would you mention to him, let's say you were coaching Samford this week, you know, that number five out there, that Julian Rochester cat, he had two hands to the face penalty last week.
No
you
question.
Need to watch him.
No question. And and he was in on a punt where we had on a punt safe. He was in the game at the same time that Terry Godwin was in. That could
That's
have been
true.
A penalty.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't want the same guy's number in there. But I think the bottom line for talking to officials before the game, the week of the game, you send anything that you're concerned about to the SEC people and have them tell
really?
The group that's
okay.
coming to the game. They have a meeting on Friday night. Hey, Coach Smart wants you to watch their guy. He's, you know, he does a bad job of people beating him around. He grabs them from behind.
I had no idea.
And you go over
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I didn't know that at all. I knew that you would say, hey, we were mad about this happened in the
right.
Notre Dame game. You point
and,
backwards.
Well,
I didn't need
you
to forward.
You do that, too. Uh-huh. You do that a lot more vociferously than you do the other. But I don't know how to spell it. But, you know, it's like
you, said it,
like
it
you call a guy and say, hey, come on, man. Let's get this. This is ridiculous now. But you do have and let's say – Jake's a good friend of mine. He's coaching over another school, and we talk during the week because we're playing them, you know, get a scouting report, you know, what did you think you could do and vice versa. And you know, that goes on sometime too. But he'll say, hey, look, you need to watch out for so-and-so. He's really bad about this, and he's getting away with it. So you add that to it too,
sure.
you know. And so – but then before the game, when they come in to meet with you before the game – they'll say, Coach, we've looked at this, and we're going to be watching for it. And I said, hey, you better be, because I'm going to remind you. And then the other thing you tell them about, they ask you, do you have any special plays? Are you going to do anything that we need to be looking for that we don't miss because we think we're not watching for it? And you say, look, when we line up in this formation, we're going to run a double pass. We're going to throw the ball backwards to Terry Godwin, and he's going to throw it down the field. Or when we line up in this formation, we're going to have more people on the right than the left, and it's going to be a tackle eligible, but Nauta's going to be eligible on the nub side. You know, so you don't want them to come back and say, hey, we just missed it. You know,
yeah.
So you tell them about the special plays.
See, I never knew that either.
No, that's
why
wild.
You come to champions. That's why we got to get more people in there, and that's why you listen to the old coach. I mean,
one of the guys here at champions, Alvin Todd, says, "Will Johnson and Wilson redshirt this year?"
Notori Johnson and Isaiah Wilson. You know, I think it looks like it's trending that way. If I'm being honest, I don't know. I mean, it's hard
Here's
to say.
Here's the thing about it. You know, we got so much build up on these guys. Particularly the fact that we were lacking in that position, and we felt like these guys are coming in here with a tremendous background and all that. But it's a big adjustment to play O-line,
yeah.
and particularly when you don't have the benefit of spring practice.
But Andrew like, Thomas did it.
He had spring practice, though, didn't he?
No, he was not an early enroll.
Oh, I forgot that. I forgot. Andrew, I thought we were talking about – hey, he just came in.
He's
and
just
he was
a badass.
Ready to go. He's smart. But the bottom line is redshirting – I always talk to our players about this. Look, if you tell a kid in August that you're going to redshirt him, you stick a fork in him. And, you know, he's basically has to live with the idea, I'm not going to get to play and blah, blah, blah. So don't give him any false hope, but say, look, there's going to be some injuries. There's going to be you might improve, blah, 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 blah. So we'll make that decision probably after the fourth or fifth game. You just keep on. You're going to travel. And if something happens, we're going to play. And that's the way that will happen on those two.
Yeah, I don't think we can tell right now. I mean, I can understand. Well, Notori didn't travel with the team.
True.
And that's
– And that, now he was –
That's on him.
It should be considered, though, too. You're right. But, you know, Notori was with that Beal. He and Beal were the very last two to arrive and arrived
as
Coach was saying.
So not only was he – you know, one of the guys that didn't arrive
he
until
got
June.
In July.
So he was in July, so he was even that much further behind the eight
exactly.
ball.
Exactly.
And Isaiah, I mean, Coach Smart said this to the touchdown club, although we weren't supposed to know this, and I pointed it out in December. When Isaiah Wilson got down here coming from New York, the heat hit him, you know, right between the eyes. And
yeah,
it's going to take him a while to get used to it. But I don't think we'll know until after this game. Because if they don't get in between against Samford, then you kind of got a good idea. I mean, if they're not going to get in against Samford, then who are they going to play against?
Well, it's not so much who you're playing against as how you stand on the roster.
That's
and I think
true.
It's a good point, too. But I tell you what, one of the real testimonies to our kids sometimes is unsolicited things that come out. And I was watching the dog walk up there at Notre Dame, and they were interviewing people and all that. And there's this one kid's a Notre Dame student, but he actually went to Isaiah's high school. Mm. And he was talking about what a good kid he was, how he cared about everybody else, and he didn't let everything get to his head, you know, all the recruiting and all. But here's an unsolicited kind of testimony to – he could have said, hey, this guy's a real jerk, you know, and all that.
He's so mean to me.
And he could tell the kid really cared about him, and he was a true freshman at Notre Dame, had just gotten there, and, you know, he was hoping that Isaiah was going to get to play. But it gets back to what I always said, that I think – You get these kids in here, it means a lot that they're good players, but you also got to have kids care about the team, too, because it's a big change over being a star and then having to come in and sacrifice and be part of the group, you know. So I just feel like from that standpoint, Isaiah, the other thing, we mentioned this, and I'm going to bring it out again. He's such a big kid. He never played against anybody's own size. He never had to really fire out and knock anybody off the ball. He's always people trying to cut him and get underneath him and all. So he's had to work on his footwork and his redirecting his body a little bit as far as Scott Sinclair getting it, you know, his body fat readjusted. So, but he's just a pup. He'll be fine. He's a big pup.
Yeah, that's very true. He's about as big as they come. I wanted to ask you, though, we've got a couple questions about it here on the Facebook Live. People want to know, you know, through two games, obviously we saw Kendall Baker make a big contribution in this last game. Solomon Kinley got in there and got some reps as well. I mean, your thoughts on the O-line through two games?
Well, I think overall we're not having as many lost yardage plays as we did last year, and part of that's because we're operating maybe 65-70% out of the gun, so we got the ability to get out of a bad play with an RPO where you can throw the ball off a bad run. But at the same time, you know, we haven't established a real sense of authority at the line, but I think that'll come. You know, our third down efficiency suffered the other night, no question about that. We made a couple big ones with Payne running it, but we didn't own the third one. But I just think overall this is an offensive line that's getting better together, and they're still searching for their own identity. And they're playing around the fact that they're playing with a new quarterback, a new cadence. Everything's different than what they worked the whole fall on, and they adjusted pretty well. And you give Fromm credit for coming in and not – knocking everything off kilter by making a lot of freshman mistakes. I mean, he avoided losing number one. Of course, he had the pick, which that was a bad decision, but it didn't hurt us. And then, like I said, you're going to have some missed handoffs.
Well, that pick, you was kind of waiting for Isaac Nott's head to come around, and it took a while for that. You know, right. I'm not putting it on Isaac. I'm just saying that their timing together was off. So that was just bad.
And you look at Jake's strength.
He was a little scared
there
for a while.
He can throw the fade with anybody. I mean, you look at that fade he threw, even though it's a miraculous catch. I mean, he put it where he's the only one that could catch it, Terry. But he can throw the fade with anybody. His intermediate passing is something he's got to really work hard on to be an effective SEC quarterback. And that's true for any freshman. But if he gets that down, that's going to really help him.
One of the first questions we had from somebody here watching the show when we walked in was, ask Coach Donnan about Georgia switching to the wild dog formation, his thoughts on that.
Well, I think a couple of times in the first game it helped us. You know, we really were able to get Sony in the end zone. We blocked pretty well. But, you know, sometimes, no more than we're running, and it's hard to really get a good gauge on it. I mean, if you're just running once or twice, it's hard. They can stop you. And, if McCole Hardeman's going to be back there, it's a pretty good chance he's going to keep the ball. But we got to do something different off of it to maybe – and I think this game is one where you might do that a little bit, so everybody else has got to work on it. But I continue to say this, and I'm going to say it again. When you're struggling offensively, you're not making a lot of first downs, you're not completing some passes that should have been caught or throwing some over – you're just always working to run more plays. And as soon as we get a little bit more continuity, running more plays and getting better at more confidence with and what we try to do, I think establishing that's going to help as much as anything, because we got a lot of different people now that can make things happen now. When you look at the fact sure. that throughout, we haven't even hardly used Nauta, we haven't used Charlie Warner. You go back to as good a catch as we made there in the end zone, he's hardly touched the ball all year, and he's a difference maker. And then we know what Hardman can do and Crumpton. I mean, there's some guys that can – and you get to whims.
But you got
to
have enough plays, like you said.
Right. You got to make some first downs. That's the thing. Right. We got to make more first downs. And then, but I'm fired up about Swift. I mean, you look at way Holyfield returned that kickoff. Oh, wow. I mean, that was a knockout.
How deflating can that be, though, to get into a situation where you think you've got it, everybody, the stadium's erupting, and then to have that pulled back?
That's always a tough deal because it's such a change the game around type play. And then to get that kind of penalty hurts you. But at the same time, it gives you a lot of encouragement to know that we got that kind of potential. You know, this is a guy's first touch of the year. He didn't play in the first game.
Yeah.
And he really did a good job with it. And then you got Harry. And, I mean, we got some backs. I mean, and I don't know what Sony's situation is, but I think in this game here, if he's not 100%, it's okay to hold him out. You'd like to play him just because – you know, he's such a threat. But
And he deserves it. The guy's just sacrificed nonstop
right,
for
right.
it.
But you got to be thinking ahead, too, because, you know, the next 2 weeks are so critical. I mean, our two first conference games, we're playing against two of the probably four best teams we play right off the bat. You know, I don't know how good Tennessee is, but they've beaten us the last 2 years. And then, you know, Florida and Auburn. But Mississippi State now, I've seen them for two straight weeks. They can make it happen on offense, and they, you know, their defense, we'll see how they do against LSU.
With DJ Looney over there and Christian Robinson, two fantastic coaches, and
they're going to have a good scouting report on us.
Yeah, they're going to know Georgia inside and out. Plus, they've got some hellacious ball players, and they're going to come at it. Those of you who just tuned in, I know a lot of you are jumping in after lunch. We are live at Champions on Baxter. We're here with former Georgia coach Jim Donnan. He is explaining stuff that we didn't even know existed. I want to say give a shout out to EuroPie, one of our fabulous sponsors, Athens Ford, our best sponsor, and of course the only sponsor that Jake Roos cares about, Founders Brewing Company, and their all day
free
IPA.
Beer.
When we were in Wrigleyville, coach,
I'm impressed with you on that, Jake.
I'm not a big IPA fan, but I started having those at the Cubs game. I'm a convert now.
Really?
You know,
this is a guy who does not drink IPA.
I do not drink IPAs. I loved it. I'm not going to tell you how many I had of them, but let's just say we were on a rooftop out there watching it with a million Georgia fans. And at the Cubs game, this is the craziest thing, Coach. The Friday night, you know, the Cubs are playing. So many Georgia fans went to that game that they were able to call the dogs. And one part of the stadium starts going, Georgia. The other side starts going, Bulldogs.
That's unbelievable.
And the Cubs fans were looking around like, what the hell is going on? They were freaking out. And, I mean, and I tweeted out, you know, some of the Cubs fans looked scared because they had no idea what was going on. And then the next day in the stadium, you know, we're at Notre Dame. We're in South Bend. And you could see all the red in the stands to start the game. But, once the game kicked off, I wasn't looking anymore. I'm following the action on the field. But when they went to the fourth quarter, you know, Georgia's got this new thing now at night where everybody puts a little flashlight on their phone, you know, and so they're holding it up at the end. And I looked up, and all the Notre Dame fans, their eyes were this big because they're like, what the hell's going on? It was all these Georgia fans because it was easy. In other words, it was easier to spot them at night holding up their cell phones.
Pretty impressive.
And it was so loud. And when Georgia actually chanted, they went one for one with the Notre Dame fans chanting.
Yeah.
And it really felt like a neutral site game. It felt like what Florida used to feel like.
That was the point I made. A lot of people were saying, oh, you know, it was 60, 70%. I don't know if it was egregious. But I do think it felt like a neutral site game. The volume that Georgia fans were able to produce.
Yeah, we got to make that kind of same kind of noise down at the Jacksonville this
but
year
but
on
it
the
doesn't
field,
happen.
Too.
It does not happen in Jacksonville because so many Georgia fans, like I started going to Georgia-Florida games in 1990. So you know what Georgia's record is since then. And I'm pretty sure it's my fault that they haven't had the success.
We're going to leave him home this year.
Yeah, I don't know about that. But
point being.
This ought to be the year for us against the Gators. I mean, they still got time to kick about 10 more guys off. Not because of that, but, I mean, it's hard to believe.
No, you're right.
I mean, they got some real issues with their team.
And they lost a lot on defense. And
right.
By your point about Georgia running more plays, becoming more seasoned, and we see this every week. And one of the questions is keep popping up here, and it's been I've seen
what
it on
is
your feet.
It? What's the question?
Well, the question is, why didn't Isaac Nauta get enough carries or touches? Why didn't DeAndre give it to DeAndre Swift more? Why didn't they give it to Nick Chubb more? You know, in other words, insert whoever. Is why didn't that player get more
didn't
touches?
Didn't make enough first downs, number one.
That's my point.
And the other thing is, going into the game, you don't have a real feel for how you're going to be able to block these guys or how you're able to protect and all that. So, but we made some nice marches, and we made them under pressure when the band was playing and you had to have it. When you can come from behind four times on the road, you're doing some good things on offense. So, I think – it's still to be determined about our offense, and particularly the fact we've got some people still missing blocks at the point of attack. You know, our best player, Wynn, missed the guy on third down against when Payne got hit. So those are going to happen. But I just think overall, taking into account you playing a true freshman with his first start on the road, and everybody knows how good he is based on – everything else, but he wasn't good enough to win the job, and so that's nothing negative.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So let's don't overrate him, but let's don't underrate how good he did, though. I mean, I like the fact that he was able to run the club, and that's what you got to have. And you know, hopefully, again, I say we play without our best DB, we play without our starting quarterback. I hope that both of them will be back. I think Parrish will be back from Mississippi State. I think Jacob's got a shot. I don't know how long, maybe
well,
a couple
more
weeks.
I was going to do that, and I was going to give you the Athens Ford injury update.
is that what we got?
That's the Athens Ford injury
update. With the power train.
We need like a dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
Tell us about the power train while you're doing it.
No, the power train, I mentioned that at the beginning, you know, the lifetime warranty they have on that, but our folks out at Athens Ford, you talk about, you know, not dropping the ball, not losing, having your best guy.
Sure.
3 years running the president's award for customer service. That is not voted on by, you know, Athens Ford themselves. That's voted on by the customers. So it's not something they can hand themselves. So Athens Ford, 3 years running, the President's Awards for customer service. And the question I keep getting is, what about Jacob Eason? What about Jacob Eason? And I mentioned this right before we caught our flight on Thursday. What we were told through some very good sources, we were given his diagnosis and what we think it is. We were told that he would be cleared to practice 2 weeks, if he did all his rehab, 2 weeks from last Sunday. So probably another week of being out, and hopefully he returns to practice this Sunday. Now, that doesn't mean he comes back for Mississippi State, because lots of times you see guys are beat up, and they come back, and they're wearing the black jersey or whatever, but he should be walking around. That's what I was told. We saw him on the with the cane at the game. I still think he might be a few weeks away. But to your point, when he comes back, a lot of people are saying, well, what if Fromm's done well? And to me, I don't even think it's a question. I think if Eason's ready to go, you play him.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to get into that because Kirby's the coach, but you got to look at the whole body of work.
And I'm not banging on Jake Fromm.
The guy's had 12 games as a starter plus the two spring practices plus fall camp, and you know, we built the offense around him from a standpoint we're sticking with this gun stuff, even though Fromm can line up under center better. I mean, he can do
that's a good point.
He can do the stuff out of the gun as well, but, I mean, he's better, he's quicker taking the snap and all that. But I just feel like Jacob's arm strength and knowledge of the offense and all that. But we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But for us to speculate when he's going to be ready, I would like to make sure when you have a knee, you got to really be careful, you know, that you don't jump. We got the best care you can have with Ron Corson and his staff and Dr. Hancock. Those guys will make the decision based on the kid, not only now but his future. You know, you don't want to put him out there and something happened to him. But I would think realistically Tennessee would be great if he can make it back for Tennessee.
Quarterback battle talk aside, you know, you look at Jake Fromm and you talked about his performance going on the road, playing that, making that first start under center in an environment like that, which, given, was not the most hostile environment that you could possibly have opened up in, but it's a big stage to be on. You know, can you talk a little bit about his performance? I mean, how you would rate that performance, what you saw from him that you liked, what you saw that you didn't?
Well, number one, you just like the fact that your team efficiency wasn't hindered. I mean, the way the plays got on, you know, we didn't have delay a game. We didn't have a lot of people looking like they didn't know where to line up. I mean, the communication was there, and that the quarterback's a direct emphasis of your communication. If he's not sure of himself, then it's hard to articulate to the rest of the players what to do. So that was 100% what you wanted. Just the fact his body language is very positive. He feels good about himself to the point where he's almost, looks like he's playing, Sandlot from the standpoint. He's not worried about the distractions, which is good, but I think it hurts him a little bit. And watching him, some of the scrimmages that I watch where he maybe takes some chances that he doesn't need to take, but I think he'll get better at that as Coach Smart and Coach Chaney coach him up. But I mentioned this last week. I felt like that he went against as good a defense in practice, being the number two quarterback. And the way we practice, the number twos go against number one defense. We went against a formidable defense all spring and fall.
Yeah.
And he was prepared for that. Even though Notre Dame had some good players, I don't think their defense is anywhere near what he went against in practice.
So
he was ready for that. And, he made some good throws. He made some he'd like to have back. But yeah. he's not a 70% passer. I mean – he's not a guy like some of these guys you see. He's a guy that's going to take some deep shots. He's going to miss some throws, but he's a guy that just does what he needs to. And
I would have liked to have seen what happened had some of those wide receivers caught the passes that he hit him in the hands with.
Yeah, and the same thing we had happen last year. Jacob overthrew some people, but he had some drops too. And that gets back my last time about first downs. If you're going to throw the ball on second four, are you going to throw the ball on third and six and the guy drops it? Boy, that really hurts you as a quarterback because it's hard enough to get the ball protected, to get the launch point, to not have it tipped, to throw the ball accurately, and then the guy drop it. I mean, that takes a lot of sting out of your confidence. And you need to think when you go up to throw a pass, you need to think why it's going to work. Yeah. Not like I used to talk to our quarterback. Sometimes a guy go up to him like, golly, what if they bring 4 weeks? God, what am I going to do? These guys can't hold them out. Well, you're thinking about what's going to happen wrong instead of what's going to happen. Hey, I got Isaiah Wynn on my left side. I got Nauta coming across underneath. I got Wynn breaking on the end route. I really feel good about this route. So
and
if
I
you
think
feel
what,
good
yeah.
about it, it's going to transcend to success as compared to – thinking why it's not going to work.
Well, there were a couple times he was running quickly. We spoke to some people who had talked to him right after the game, and he said it kind of felt like that Lee County game last year where he was under pressure nonstop. And
that's
going to
happen.
But he bounced back. He had that fumble. He went over to the sideline, went up to his offensive line and said, guys, that was on me. That's my fault. On this next drive, we're going to score. And, I think they did. But point being, he took responsibility on himself, told his line that it was okay, took the blame, and then led them to the scores. And as you said, they kept coming back from being down,
Yeah, and we've seen
So I don't think the kid got rattled. He made some mistakes, but to your point, he's always confident, and I don't think he ever got to the point where he was dejected. Even after Mecole Hardman dropped one and Javon dropped one, it was like, okay, next play. And as much as we want to talk about Eason versus Fromm, I think that confidence level, as you said, that believing that it's going to work, that's one thing that Fromm has heaps of.
Yeah, here's the thing about it, too, that this young man has the belief the players understand that it's not like, hey, we lost Jacob. What are we going to do now? We're going to have to play around our quarterback's deficiencies. This guy doesn't know the offense. This guy doesn't make these throws as compared to, hey, we lost Jacob, but boy, I tell you, Jake Fromm's coming in and done some really good things. We feel good about him. And there's not many teams can have a guy come in and play quarterback for you that lose their first team guy. What happens when Baker Mayfield comes back? Sure, Murray's going to come in there and play for them. He's played at Texas A&M, but normally speaking, it's hard to supplant your first-team quarterback. But I would say this, too. Around the country, some things that are just startling to me about throwing and catching the ball is the fact that Ohio State in the last two games has had quarterback throw for over 70, almost 70%. They've given up 67 out of 103 passes.
Good Lord.
Against Indiana and against Oklahoma for 803 yards and six touchdown passes. So that's Ohio State, supposedly the best corners in the country. So yeah. If you don't get the rush and you go against these guys that can bounce around like Baker Mayfield, and you got a guy like Baker, he's completing 72% of his passes. He had 18 in a row in the first half, his first game.
And that's then Mike last Bobo week, numbers there.
So I'm just saying the bottom line is, you know, there's some real high standards on a fit pass efficiency, and I think if you look at our league right now, you know who's leading the league in pass efficiency? No. Shurmur at Vanderbilt.
Oh,
of course,
wow.
He played against Alabama A&M last week. Yeah. Drew Locke threw for 7 touchdowns against Southeast Missouri State, so he's leading in yardage and all that. But let's see who they're playing against, what they're going to do.
One thing you mentioned that I think is so important and people aren't giving enough credit to is the strength of the defense that Jake Fromm has been going against. I believe it was either Mecole Hardman, and I believe it was Mecole. It was either him or Terry, though, after the game on Saturday said, hey, I have no doubt in my mind that we have the best defense in America. Not they said flat out. I think we have the most talented defense in America. Can you talk a little bit about that, about the defensive performances you've seen so far? Because I think feel like we they've
got
been impressive.
We got a good defense. Whether we're go that far yet,
because
we got some holes in our secondary right now. I mean, when your head coach is talking about it all the time, he's worried about it. And you look at the personnel we have back there. You know, Dom's been a good secondary guy, and now we got Reed coming in here as a transfer. You got Terry LeCount, true freshman. You got Baker. But you know, the bottom line is, the ball in the air. How are you gonna play the ball in the air when you don't get a rush? Because that's gonna happen. But I'll get back to this about the competitive thing. That goes from Kirby coming in with a blueprint of developing players. You got to go good against good. When you got a chance to practice, and we did the same thing at Marshall and Oklahoma, you can't build anybody and develop them going one against three and getting a false sense of security.
Yeah.
You got to go one against one, some one against two, and because that's what you're going to see on Saturday afternoon. I know Johnny Majors came to speak at the Touchdown Club, or the Athens Touchdown Club, and Lauren would always bring the guys out there to watch us practice. And, you know, I knew Johnny, and we were out there. We were getting ready to play Florida. And one of the things we did every Tuesday is we did 10 minutes of one versus one live. Now, we didn't let Robert Edwards carry the ball much, but the point is you got to simulate what you're going to see in the game. And Kirby does that, maybe not putting them on the ground, but I think – and I'm not the cheerleader for Kirby as much as I am just saying, look, to build your team, you got to go and develop them and make them work on the things they're going to see in the game.
Right.
So when you go to the game, it'll be a lot easier for it. And the confidence we showed in that game in the clutch, making those situational plays, looked good last week. We played around some secondary issues that we have. Our coverage is were changed up a little bit, you know, where they didn't get some deep balls. We didn't necessarily press them at the line of scrimmage. We bailed out, or we played our corners deeper and forced them to throw underneath.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And that's coaching from Kirby and Mel Tucker. I mean, those are two veteran guys. This guy's been an NFL guy going up there against some Ben Hur quarterbacks now. I mean –
real quick, Coach, Jason Sweat just wanted me to tell you.
How about Jason?
He wanted me to tell you that he loves you.
Well, I love you, Jason. Hey, seriously, Jason was in here when we had the signing day party. He was here with his daughter. It was great, and got a chance to see him. And that's one of the things on his Facebook. You know, I'm not on it much, but it's always good to see some of your old players and contact them. And I want to congratulate one of mine that just got nominated for the Hall of Fame, Richard Seymour. I guarantee you that young man is really deserving of it. I never will forget, 17 years old, came to Georgia. He wasn't even 18 years old when he played in his first game. And we were playing against South Carolina, and that's his school, you know, from Columbia.
Right.
And we didn't have any game shoes for him because – he had big feet. We didn't order, you know, 18. And our kids were going over there to work out, and we always put their workout gear over there on Friday, and, you know, they'd kind of wear their game shoes. And he came up and had his head down. I said, "What's the matter? What's the matter, Rich?" He said, "Coach, they don't even have any game shoes." I said, "Well, we got to." So I went right in and lit into our equipment, man. He said, "Coach, I ain't got any 18s. I mean, so we went over and got South Carolina guy had some, and we painted the red swoosh on him. We had South Carolina shoes for him. It was great.
That's a classic.
Well, how about the career Richard had?
Oh, incredible. Oh. Incredible, man.
He's just a good man.
Yeah, and he's done a lot for a lot of different people. And I know Bill Belichick, when he came in and looked at the tape on him, I said, as good as he is on tape, he's even better live. I said, he can stand you up and stop the run and rush the passer. And then we had Stroud, too. So
I do remember one of my favorite plays. He actually took a guard and drove him into the running back, and the running back knocked down the quarterback. And he's standing there over three people who have all fallen backwards. And I'm like, and I think it was a sophomore year. I think it might have been against South Carolina again. I need to go back to the photo.
He liked to play against South Carolina. I mean,
all three guys fall down. I was like, wow.
I asked Brad Scott before the South Carolina game, and we were warming up. I said, "Brad, seriously, how in the world could y'all not offer Richard Seymour a scholarship?"
That's cold.
He said, "Coach, we had him in the ninth grade at camp. He just didn't look very – he looked a little clumsy." I said, "Well, he's turned around." He said, "Yeah, we made a bad mistake." But how about – not only we had Terrell Davis last year, and now maybe Seymour, and then Champ's coming up next year.
Sure, sure.
That's exciting.
Absolutely.
Champ's got to be a shoe-in. There's no question there in my mind. I mean, that's – he's just unreal for him. A lot of people were hitting us up early on saying, can you have the coach break down his thoughts on Jim Chaney and Mel Tucker, the kind of interplay between those two?
Yeah, one of the things you do when you scout a team, it's not just you're not just going on two different buses. You're going as a unit, right? Even though the defense is on a bus and the offense, and you talk about, look, for us to win this game, we're going to have to maybe play a lot better on defense than we played, because this team is going to score a lot of points, you know, if we don't, and vice versa. So you got to be together on knowing what the other team's strengths are, you know. And sometimes I know on Wednesday night we used to come in and get the other staff, let's just say the defense, we got them to look at the other team's defense sometime just to see if they had any keys on them, you know, that might help us a little bit, because they've been watching their offense and vice versa. You know, you take about an hour and do that, because sometimes a defensive guy's looking at a defensive player a lot different than the coach trying to run a play. But I think the good part again about Kirby here is he really knows what he wants on defense, and this guy has been around him, and they've coached together, along with Coach Schumann's been there too in the press box with Kirby, so they really got good communication. And then Chaney, it's a work in progress, but he does have a line coach that he's worked with not only at Arkansas but also Tennessee. And I think Coley, having been a coordinator before and working with Jimbo Fisher, who wasn't a coach that worked for Coach Saban, I mean, all of that gets back to, you know, your philosophy and everything. So I think the big thing is these two guys understand that there's going to be years where maybe the defense isn't as good as it is now, and some years where the offense is going to be better than it is now, and they got to help each other out.
I don't know. The question kept coming up is, like, what about the interplay between those two? And I'm like, they're both trying to win. Do you think one's mad at the other? I never could get a
– no. I
didn't understand what the question was, because they kept saying –
I remember down at Florida State one time, we were playing a team, we couldn't stop them. I went up to Bill Parcells. I said, could you just make them miss their turn one time? Just once.
I mean, this staff – and, again, you hear this kind of boilerplate, this staff is very together, congealed and all that. But from our sources who were, you know, not – who would tell us – one way or the other, if the staff didn't get along, which, and we reported this under when Jeremy Pruitt was here, there were major staff issues. There was no question about
it. It's hard to know for sure, but
But I've heard nothing but good things about this staff and how well they get along. And it seems
the
defense picked up the offense and vice versa.
The one thing about Kirby with the one voice situation, you really don't get to know these guys off the field as much
Very
as
true.
You do certain places. But, you know, when you see the congeniality that both of them have when they get an opportunity to get out in front of the public when they're interviewed, you know, before a bowl game and when the season, you can see that these guys are good communicators.
Yeah.
And I think Chaney's history over the years, he's always had pretty good quarterbacks. And, you know, he just been stifled a little bit having to play a freshman quarterback both years and kind of cut you back a little bit with a limited offensive line. So let's see what happens here.
You know, but I think it might have been a situation where somebody saw them talking before the game or something.
Sure.
And they're like, well, you know, the media negativity, like, are they upset or, you know, something going
Holy
on? And every
smoke.
Time I see those people, those two guys are always cracking up. And if Jim Chaney's not smiling, then he's not breathing because that man is always.
He's good. He's very, very personable, and so is Mel.
Yeah.
But I think the thing about it, if people are looking for stuff like that, like the other night they had a game on and showed the coach from the Saints and
Adrian Peterson
was walking
yeah.
behind him and all, you
I
know.
I think
but
that's what it was because all of a sudden I got, you know, there must have been four questions about it. And I'm like, but, you know, where did this come
I
from?
I can't speak very much from this perspective of this staff, but I know Kirby's not going to put up with any kind of interchange
no.
like that.
Well, they seem to be
But one of the things
fantastic.
I always talk to our coaches, players, trainers, managers, everything, this is a family situation. And, you know, when things aren't going good, we don't want to be pointing fingers like, hey, if the offense would do better, we'd be better, you know, and vice versa. And the same thing with the coaches' wives. You know, you can have a defense that's shutting people out and the offense is not doing much. You don't want the defensive coordinator's wife saying, hey, you know, and it's just I've seen that happen, and it's terrible, you know. And I always had a meeting.
Happened 2 years ago.
I always had a meeting with the wives, and I said, look, you know, you got to understand that we're going to have – we don't want any kind of – I don't want to hear about that you were playing tennis with so-and-so and you were talking about so-and-so. Hey, what's
– So you don't want them going to Facebook like certain Texas Border Regents guys?
This is our team. You know, we're going to talk each other up, and that's it.
Yeah. All right.
Well, with that, we're going to have to wrap it up. I want to thank everybody for coming out.
Do we get a lot of likes today?
We did. We did very well in that regard. A lot of viewers. So thank you guys. Make sure to share this video. Make sure to give us a thumbs up.
We got
a podcast
too, right?
We got a podcast. You can get that on iTunes and Google Play. And
how long before that comes out?
Oh, gosh. That'll be up in just a few hours.
Yeah, probably an hour.
Okay, yeah.
Hey, my son's got a football game today. I got to wrap this thing
All
up.
Right.
Oh, what time is he playing?
4:30 at George Walton.
You need to go scout him.
What's he play?
He plays left tackle and outside linebacker.
For which team?
Athens Christian.
Hey, go get him. What's the latest on Jibunor? What's the
Richard Jibunor?
I'll tell you when we get off the air.
All right.
Thank you guys for tuning in.
Georgia had an offer.
Shout out to Your Pie. Shout out to Founders with the All Day IPA, Athens Ford, Cable East, and, Champions
going back
Chicken
to IPA,
for Havasu.
What about that Backwoods Bastard?
Oh, yeah. No, no, no. Yeah, they got the Dirty Bastard on here, which is tremendous as well. This is a little bit more your speed, the Dirty Bastard a little bit more for me. So that's the grown-up beer.
What do you drink one of those and say, you Dirty Bastard? Yeah.
After four or
and
five, you
crazy
would.
Thing, all the people that own restaurants that I talk to about brewers just rave about them. They're like, they're my favorite brewery. I'm like, wow. So got to thank those guys and thank everybody here at Champions for having us.
Shout out. Thanks, guys.
That's it for this episode of the UGA Sports Live Podcast. Tune in next week for more Georgia Bulldogs news and notes from Athens.